obviously my role here in a sense is to respond to Michael's paper and also take it perhaps in additional directions as well. And I obviously found Michael's paper to be very interesting substantially on many, many levels. But I've chosen to take a couple of elements of Michael's paper to discuss this afternoon and take them in a particular direction. Particularly Michael's emphasis on ideas about the materiality of the material function of language and his correlation of that with things like painting, the idea of sculptural assemblages and constellations and marking. And I think the phrase you used, Michael, was, one phrase that was used was a kind of a bush poetic as being a kind of assemblage. And that those ideas themselves correlate quite directly with a lot of, or some of the thinking and writing I've been doing recently in terms of attempting to think about a transcultural potential between some elements in Western poetic theory and Aboriginal painting. So I'm going to explore that in relation to Michael's paper. And the real emphasis here for me is trying to correlate Charles Olson's poetics of projectivism with Aboriginal traditional or contemporary Aboriginal painting that uses traditional form. And I think that I've used here the title The Craft of Coherence and a quote from Olson: "The will to cohere the proposition is a simple one. Energy is larger than man, but therefore if he taps it as it is in himself, his uses of himself are extensible." Again, to use that idea of the projective and also the assemblage in human directions and degree. So the elements in Michael's paper I'm going to respond to today, and clearly I'm just choosing these in order to speak about them in terms of my own work at the moment, are firstly the section where he spoke about, the colonial deception is related to writing, as Mukey notes, the fact that Aboriginal writing systems do not record sounds of language, etc., but particularly in fact, this writing resembled a writing system like Chinese. Now, clearly that correlates with, say, for instance, Ezra Pound's Poetics of the Ideogram, etc. And as I'll be discussing in this paper, in my response, the manner in which we might be able to read Aboriginal paintings as well. Secondly, Michael's reference to the Eric Michaels report, where he quotes from Francis Japarala that land that is perceived to have history is not empty. And I think that's a really significant comment. As you'll see in my response, the corporealization of history within both language and painting is a very significant correlation between Western and non-Western modes in Australia. Thirdly, am I up to three? The form of an object is a diagram of forces. And finally, the term constellation verges on metaphor and relies on a perspective of a group of stars seen from a great distance. So they're just a set of sort of, I suppose, in themselves, constellating ideas that come from Michael's paper that I'd like to very obliquely and possibly opaquely refer to through this response. Whenever I think about Charles Olson's projectivism, for those of you who are familiar with his work, I always start out in my own head with a kind of visual apparition. Instead of reckoning first with words or with language or with a language-based grammar of some kind, I always see in my head a kind of material apparatus hanging in imagined space. This apparatus has plastic, tangible shape and buoyancy, somewhat like a mobile or a constellation hanging in the air as if formed by a condensation of kinetic energy within a field of appearance in my mind. Its appearance is shaped by a choreographic modelling of the projective impulse, an archetype of an eruption of energy that is aroused by the attention of cognition and materialized as an aesthetic object in a moment of poesis. This projective form springs forth with substance and shape like a mobile. It is a set of points in space marked by gestural and rhetorical density, and like a constellation, it is the articulation of those points in a web of relation, movement and attachment. It's also moving, a momentum creating vectors of spatialization and materialization. Its movement always contingent and emergent, and rarely descriptive. So it's only after fabricating this kind of shape in my head that I actually begin to be able to understand Olson's poetry. By the way, I'm not talking about Australian poetry here at all today, just painting. Olson's poems, as if their words, lines, and pitch and ideation are only available once I have properly manufactured a reading machine in my head of the right calibration and fidelity. This doesn't occur discursively or reductively. Instead, the emergence of projective form, the emergence of projective form does not involve the accumulation or elimination of poetic substance. Rather, I end up with a technology that can detect and transmit new orders of reality. It functions somewhat like a wildly arranged antenna that in fact takes the shape of the signal that it receives, solidification occurring along emergent lines or patterns of cybernetic intensification. So it's more a vehicle for the plastic and semantic realization of poesis. In a bibliography on America for Ed Dorn, Olson cites Whitehead's, "We should start from the notion of actuality as in its essence a process. The physical side and the mental side of this process coalesce to form a compound of reception and anticipation, a fact of appearance in which the material cosmos coheres with cognition and with culture in the process of poesis. The projective structure is immediately sensational and also," and this is where I'm making the link to Aboriginal painting, "it's also immediately genealogical, an event appearing simultaneously upon vectors of interiority and exteriority. We might say that both despite being and because of a projection of the imagination, my fabrication of a projection form is a substantiation of a narrative of the history of the present." And that's in the Foucauldian sense from Discipline and Punish, page 31 of Discipline and Punish. As Olson writes in Proprioception, the projective form appears literally as historical depth, projected within and through corporeality. Movement through the material cosmos and historical space-time produces a corporeal home woven out of the old and the new, a compound of reception and anticipation. So really here, I'm trying to propose that projectivism's corporealization of history and its vanishing point, with its vanishing point within the genealogical depth of the interiority of the body and its biophysical and linguistic materializations shares a poetical gestalt, if you like, with Australian Aboriginal art. Discourse on contemporary Australian Aboriginal art was revolutionised in 98 by the publication of Aboriginal Art by visual anthropologist and cultural theorist Howard Morphy. Morphy writes that, quote, "Aboriginal paintings are maps of land. It is necessary, however, to define precisely what is meant by a map in this context. From an Aboriginal perspective, the land itself is a sign system. Aboriginal paintings can only be fully understood as maps once it's realised that the criterion for inclusion is not topographical, but mythological and conceptual. Paintings are thus representations of a totemic geography." And this is what I think is probably one of the most important paintings of the 20th century in Australian art, Clifford Possum Japuljari's Wallagoolong from 1997. So from an Aboriginal perspective, the land is already a sign system because it was implicitly encultured at the moment of its creation in the dream time. The landscape can be considered as a composition of encoded narratives that are recalled and reiterated in moments of poesis, such as in paintings or on body, the bark or canvas, stories or ceremony. Rather than simply exhibiting topographies in a conventionally empirical or picturesque manner, Aboriginal artworks represent nodes of cosmological and semiotic intensity that were created in the dream time, are still present today, and indeed are substantiated in the objective artwork itself. Aboriginal paintings actualize, therefore, an aesthetics of the history of the present in the Foucauldian sense. They begin from an irrefutable set of actualities, the emergence of a lived cosmos in the dream time, the continuous, contiguous emergence of language and painting and song and ceremony as materializations of ancestral poetics, and the present moment expression of an ethos of place, the genealogy of its character or nature. In a sense, the artworks are simultaneously genealogical and concrete as both substance and a history of substance. As such, they are also generically projective in the Olsenian sense, insofar as they represent and also actualize the fusion of the proprioceptive senses and the kinetic flow of semiotic intensity. The nucleus of a reading of Wollongong can be found in its plastic corporealization of the nature of the artist's country in its material, historical, and poetic dimensions, its stance toward reality, to use another quote from Olson. Looked at first as a painting per se, the work is a material artifact made of synthetic polymer paint on canvas. It's perhaps not surprising that when the painting was purchased at auction in 2007 by the National Gallery of Australia, it was widely compared to Jackson Pollock's Blue Poles. Ron Radford, the director of the gallery, was reported to say at the time that it is to dot painting what Blue Poles is to American art. Not unlike Pollock's reduction of classical scale, and this is getting into the guts of my paper, perspective and depth to the projective actualization of the action of the body. Classical scale is reduced entirely to the action of the body in Pollock's work. Also, similarly, Possum Japuljari's painting emerges at the confluence of the body of the painter and the site of expression. Morphy emphasizes the manner in which Japuljari moved around the canvas, while painting different intensities of his totemic geography. So this would have been a big canvas lying on the ground, and Clifford Possum moving around the painting on the ground. There's no up or down or north, south, east or west as there might be in a kind of map, for instance. It's entirely to do with the scale of the body and the manifestation of that genealogical history into the present moment as it's actualized within that picture plane. How am I going for time? Four more minutes? Three more minutes? So the scale of the body is central to the creative procedure. Japuljari actualizes a kind of metamorphosis of spatial, historical, and mythological perspectives, which has its corollary, I think, in Olson's projective intention. So in concert with its material corporealization of the dreaming, the painting's actualization of I think the painting actualizes a kind of pre-ontological dimension in the sense that Emmanuel Levinas suggested in Otherwise Than Being, that ethos always precedes ontology. The ethos that we see is in fact the totemic geography and its substantiation of relations of cohabitation and relation and more than just, therefore, caring or appealing to country, the ethos of country that's substantiated in the painting calls upon histories of character, the character of place, as they appear within networks of connection, interdependence, and signification. So in a manner that's analogous, I think, to Japuljari's creation of the totemic geography in this painting, by moving around the canvas and shifting the scales of narrative and history according to location, perspective, and memory, I think the Olson's projective impulse synthesizes nodes of experience, ideation, and historical depth within the projective gestalt of the poem or artifact as it exists in the present time. And thereby, they both mitigate, I think, against the egotistical sublime of the West. Really what I'm trying to say there is that in terms of craft, my paper in response to Michael is emphasizing perhaps a renovation of form, which I think is a significant issue in relation to how we think about the different issues that have been brought up so far. Thanks.